we're back. Constantly Varied, episode 44.
44. Yeah, I seen a stat the other day on this, actually. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you. Not sorry. To get in the top percent of one podcast, or top 1% of podcasts ever, guess how many podcasts you have to post?
Oh, 10,000?
21.
Hold on.
To be in the top 1% of all podcasters of all time, right, you have to post 21 podcasts.
21 episodes, that's it.
That's it.
And we've done 700.
700.
Right, okay.
Isn't that insane?
Yeah. We're in the top 1% podcasters in the world.
Like, there's more insane number one episodes, like 20 million or whatever it is, and then there's maybe half that get past five. Less than half get past 10, and then it just keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller to 21.
Ah, that's interesting.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, and we talk all the time about, you know, is this the thing? Yeah. You know, is this worth our time? Yada, yada, yada.
Here we are, 44 in for this.
But part of the reason that we're still with it, because we want to persevere and say, we want to make sure we stick with it and get better at this thing so we can keep delivering the message or whatever. Yeah, okay, that's good, isn't it?
Yeah, I only found that stat out the other day. I was like, I need to tell Jamie, and I only just remembered.
21, okay. So, as you can hear, I'm here with James.
Hi,
I'm always here.
And then also, this week, very exciting, we're here with Emmanuel Machado.
All right.
Did I say Machado right?
Oh, yeah, it is.
Is Machado. That good? There's a bit of shh, not a
sh. Machado.
Machado.
Yes.
Okay, our amazing manager in Bill Smithfield.
Yes.
First time on a podcast ever, right?
This is my first time ever. In English, my God.
Yeah. And in English. Total ninja. Okay, deadly. Well, listen, today we're going to get into our main topic of living in the gap. I'm going to talk about what that means and how difficult that can be. But before that, we're going to talk a little bit about training and how training's going overall. James, do you want to start? Give us an idea. How was training going? Any big standout moments last week?
Snatch day on Friday, like from a coach and me as an athlete point of view, was amazing. I was saying to you, we went for a coffee there, Jamie, and I got the whole way up to 90 kilos without thinking about what was on the bar. I would literally do the snatch, add a bit of weight, do the snatch, add a bit of weight, do the snatch, add a bit of weight. And then I put 93 kilos on the bar and went, oh, it's getting heavy. And then I missed 93 once and went, I'm done. Because I was moving really well and I was really happy up to that point. So that 80 kilos used to always be that number. And before that it was 70, and before that it was 60. Like I remember that change happening. And that's the first time I've got to 90 being like, haven't even thought about what's on the bar. So that was a real like light bulb moment for me going, oh, I've got stronger, I've got more powerful. Because it's never, ever been the case that 90 kilo snatches just happens.
Mm-hmm. Like I said to you, you've been putting your legs through it, right? Yeah. Every training session, been leg heavy, and you're killing yourself in it. So that's where it pays off, right?
Yeah. And it just goes to show, like, if you, I was saying to you, like, Amy has specific, we have general specific focus points as a coaching team that you prescribe in the coaching notes. But then in the class, coach will be like, focus on this, this, and this, or whatever it is, and whatever Amy says, I go after it like a batter to hell most of the time. And that has really paid off, just really dialing in on that. So if she's like faster legs or faster feet or more explosive, land higher on the box, land lower on, like whatever the thing was, I would go chase that day. And it's really, really paying
off. That's great, because the coach has the master plan of over the few months going to cover everything. Daddy's follow along, simple as that, right? Manu, how's training going generally? I know you're a general beast and savage, so how's it going like very recently, and any highlights?
All right, about the training the last week, well, I'm gonna pick the same. This snatch day was deadly. Like I feel really, really comfortable, and I feel way powerful than usual. Like I had the power, right? But on last Friday I feel way, way powerful. And I start lift 100 kilos on Thursday, right? I start thinking about 100. And
nice.
All on Friday, I pick the 100 and I tried four times. But the problem wasn't how high was the bar. The problem was the catch. So I, come on, the drive is the hardest part here, doing really, really well. So just catch the bar. And then in the fourth time I got it, the 100, I was like, in the moment was really, really good.
That feels good. That's the number, isn't it? You want to hit.
Yeah, like the 100 started getting more usual lifting 100 kilos on snatch. So this for me is like, this is my goal about snatch. So now move further, further, further.
I love that you started doing on Thursday. I started snatching on Thursday. That's class. Yeah. And really on Tuesday, right? Because we did the muscle snatch and the overhead squat. Yeah, amazing.
And
okay.
The fitness around the bronco tests and push harder on zone 5. It's getting not comfortable, because it's not comfortable that session, but I'm feeling better.
So yeah, and really I'm feeling that myself. My cardio is just like, it was more confidence in it than I've had in a long time. Like my highlight is this very simple one. I did 5 training sessions last week. It's the first time in a long time I've done that. So I think that's coming from the nutrition. Really feeling the benefits of having the nutrition tidied up.
Yeah, there's a nice downstream effect of that, isn't there? Like, you just have more energy, everything's a bit in place.
Yeah,
you can ignore one thing to go, ah,
and there's just been this clarity around, if I get my food right on a specific day, I'm way more likely to train that day. And if the food goes wrong on a specific day, like Monday, I wasn't prepared.
Yeah,
it fucking went out the window. I forgot to eat for like 9 hours. And then it came to training time. I was starving. I was feeling a little nauseous. I'm like, I can't eat and train right now, but I have to eat, so I can't train. I had to kind of choose between the two. And I went home with that like penny drop. Yeah. Like, if I don't get that right, there is that like knock-on effect. So it's like the training makes my nutrition want to get better, and then the nutrition gets it, and there's that like looping effect. So yeah, delighted with that. So overall, can't complain. I think we're motoring, right? Speaking of training then for the next week, is there anything you're looking forward to, James?
Yes. I'm gonna say Monday. I can't wait for Monday. I got to program this one. It's not a horrible cardio workout like a lot of the ones I've programmed recently have been. Instead, we've got like an upper body strength day, and we're doing something different. Barbell floor press. So that'll be from the rack, and then we're doing a heavy 3. So you think all the time, we floor press very often, but it's always with dumbbells. So you're limited, one, how heavy you can literally go, because we only have X heavy dumbbells. Whereas the barbell, we can really load that up. But then two, like going from dumbbells all the time to a barbell with something feels like, it would be like going from a Dublin bike to a race bike. You're just all of a sudden going, oh, this is way easier. So I'm really looking forward to seeing both how people are able to really push this, but then I'm looking forward to doing it as well. And then we do have a part B. I forgot about it. And the workout is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 strict pull-ups and push press at quite a heavy weight, 60 and 42.5. So it's a proper like get strong day with like a little element of a workout towards the end, but the focus is definitely on leaving here fitter, more strong athlete. So I can't wait for that.
Yeah, more strong.
Is more strong. I know. Yeah, sorry, words. I think we're all struggling with words a little bit today, aren't we?
Yeah,
but yeah, I'm really looking forward to that.
But that session looks like it's one of those when you leave, like, I got upper body stronger today. No doubt about it.
You just have no arms and no shoulders left for the rest of the day or the rest of the week.
But by the time Wednesday comes, I'm going to be a beast.
Yeah, precisely.
Daily. Manu, what are you looking forward to?
So I'm looking forward for the next Tuesday. We go for 5 rounds each 4 times, 20 times 80 meters shuttle runs, 600 meters on bike, and again 20 times 80 meters shuttle runs. So we talk about that. I'm looking for build this conditioning, right? Put the weights away, not away, but focus more on conditioning. So I'm looking for this workout. It's gonna be surrenderless.
Yeah,
it's gonna be
tough. It's a lot of short runs, isn't it?
Yes, 20 times.
Yeah, we know for 8 meters, like, we can go. So I think the pace on this one is going to be pretty heavy pace. That second set of short runs is going to be tasty.
Like, we go every 8 minutes, so it's like,
yeah, it's going to be nasty. Sure. Deadly. But I think the cardio is ready for it. For me, I have to say, tomorrow is looking just like dreamy, as James would say. I'm actually embodying James here. This is what he would normally pick this. I'm even using his words now. So we're snatch tomorrow. I posted on Instagram, did you see that yesterday? Yeah. About my love affair with snatch. And like, it's so good to be back in that groove and be able to do it regularly and just finding like knocking some of the cobwebs off, knocking some of the awkward corners off it. It's just starting to feel like, oh, I've got this again. I'm back in the rhythm. So building upon the week on week, like being able to do it twice last week and then hit it again this week. This session is all high hang snatches. Like we're doing triples and doubles and then we're going to go singles. And it's going to be all about speed under the bar and then locking in that catch. And I could definitely do it getting a bit faster. So I'm looking forward to just getting that, as we call it, drive and dive is the name of the workout. So it's going to be a fun session. I can't wait for it.
Here, thinking about some of the stuff we talk about behind the scenes all the time is this idea of athleticism and work capacity. And I don't know about you. I imagine you're the same. But I never feel more athletic than whenever a snatch is moving well. Even if it's like 40 kilos, like not that heavy for me, but just like whoom, it clicks in, you're like, oh, that's so good.
Such a good feeling.
Such a good feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's got it all. So that's tomorrow. That's Thursday. So keep yourself. I would say that the best advice is to keep showing up for those sessions because that will build so well. If you do it every week, if you miss a few weeks, it's hard. You're almost starting again a little bit, trying to give yourself another few weeks to get back on the train. So yeah, keep showing up for those sessions. Okay, we're going to get straight to our main topic here. And as I said at the start, it's living in the gap. So what we're really talking about here is, you know, when you start a goal, you define a goal for yourself and you say, I want to achieve something. And then it's a clearly defined flag in the ground off in the distance. And then you have to work your way towards that goal. And when you're kind of halfway through the process in that middle zone, it's where it gets really difficult because you have to persevere. You've done an awful lot of work, but yet there's loads of work to do and you're never quite sure if you're going to get there. And I think it can be a very like emotionally stressful time because it's very uncertain. You're getting tired and there's all these distractions coming in and you know that you have to keep, like, the effort is to stay focused, to stay confident, to stay committed to the work. And that's the difficult piece. And we all have that experience, I'm sure, all the time. And we all probably are living some version of it right now as well. So I want to talk about it because, Manu, your story about how you've ended up where you've ended up just blows my mind. Myself and James were talking about it all morning before you got here. So I want to just take that step back of like recounting the steps of how you've ended up where you are. Yep. So take us back to Brazil. Like, you were in Brazil, you left Brazil like a year and a half ago, is that what you said?
Yeah, like 20 months ago, I think so. Yeah.
So before you left, what were you doing in Brazil?
So in Brazil, I had my degree as an engineer, right? And I used to work on Whirlpool. So there I work in a manufacturing. So I was supervisor of the manufacturing, kind of.
For Whirlpool, the people who make like washing machines, fridges.
Like around the world is washing machines, but in Brazil, the biggest job, the biggest deal is refrigerators. Like,
okay.
It's the biggest manufacturer in the South America. So it was huge.
Right.
Huge.
Yeah. So you're making fridges?
Yes. Loads. Like, with some numbers per day was 8,000 refrigerators
per day, every single day.
Yeah.
Wow. Like, so you're supervising the manufacturing. So big team of people you're managing the whole time.
Yes. 100 people every single day.
Oh my Lord.
Every single day.
Okay. No.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. So you had studied to be an engineer and then you were working in manufacturing.
Yeah.
And then you decided to move to Ireland.
So I never had this thing in my mind to move abroad. I always said like, oh, I love Brazil. I will be here for all my life. So I never think about that. And then Duda comes. So, and she has this dream to move abroad. And I was like, let's see. Let's try this. Because on Whirlpool, I didn't have a great, like, I didn't have a purpose of what I'm going to do here, right? I just go to work every single day, do some refrigerators, get my wage, live the life. But it was a life without any purpose. So I come to Ireland with her.
So it was her dream to move abroad. And you said, I'll go with you.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Amazing. So you moved to Ireland for love.
Yes. Basically that.
Isn't that nice? Very good. Okay. So... yeah, that's interesting because I would have thought like such a big thing, such a big life change.
huge.
That, and if it's not like primarily your decision,
yeah,
then you have to get your head around that.
So when I decide come to Ireland, I decide with some goals, right? To try make my life here a bit easier, right? Because I far from everything. So in Brazil, I used to train CrossFit the last 7 years in my life. So then I think I can start work as a coach or something around this there. It's going to make my life way better. So then I can have a purpose around this. And I can't stop eating bananas. So this was my two goals.
You told me this last week.
This is, yeah. Right, I can't survive because my diet is basically bananas and eggs. So I have sure we have RX in Ireland, but I don't have sure if they have bananas. And now I can prove we have bananas and eggs. So I can still survive with this. So this was my goal. Start work with CrossFit in any direction I think about or be a coach and keep eating well. So this was my goal. And bananas was the like number one.
And did you Google, do they have bananas in Ireland? Or did you
like,
find...
I know. I just come here and the first step in the Lidl was like, where's the banana? Oh, there. I can't live here.
What a moment. Yeah. Goal number one achieved. Yeah. Oh, that's so mega.
If you were to move to another country, what's the food, Jamie, that you'd be like, I hope they have this?
Oh, good question. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God. If I move to Japan, I would imagine I can't eat anything in Japan. Just rice and fish. Yeah. Shit, I'll eat the rice. Yeah, that's a good one though, isn't it?
Like, there's nothing like a good steak here, is there? Or potatoes?
Yeah, potatoes.
Or drink.
Yeah, like Guinness is bad everywhere though.
Yeah, Guinness is bad everywhere. You'd have to just forgo the good Guinness. Oh my God. Okay, that's so funny. So you arrived here with a dream, bananas and CrossFit coaching. So what did you do when you arrived? You came over and you said, I'm going to learn how to speak English. That was one of the things, right?
Yeah.
And you're going to get some work to support yourself while working towards coaching. Was that the general goal or the way
so
it worked?
So when I come here to Ireland, my English was 0, 10% of this, right? My English was just, hi, how are you? So the first step was I had to learn English. That's it. And I choose a job where I need to speak basically every single day. I think this was the most of problem with the people come here to learn English and they pick a job when they don't practice English. So when they gonna learn, they have the school, but the school's not like, it's just 3 hours. It's not enough at all. So I pick a job and start working in a kitchen, right? But in this kitchen, there was a Brazilian guy there, but the other team was from around the world. So if I don't understand, I ask for the Brazilian guy. So then works. But basically all the time we just speak English. So this was my first English step here. Then I start work as a barista. So as a barista, you need to speak all the time. And I started the internship. So the internship was the big step on my English at all.
So before you got internship, you were studying, you were doing school.
Yes.
And then you were working in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And did you leave that to go and work as a barista then?
Yeah. So my first kitchen closed after the new year. So I need to find a new job, right? So then I started looking for a job. And here near Bua Century, we have an insomnia coffee shop, right?
Yeah.
So then I asked there, like, can I work here? And a miracle. It's like, they have a job there. So then I started work there. So it was really handy for me because I just come here to do the workouts and go there to work. So
and a story on that, anyone who does the Saturday morning comp session will know that Manny used to be in the comp session. And anyone knows that session, it's a beast. Like, everyone gets brutalized. We're all after the session, have a little chat down at the reception, and then we walk over for a coffee. And by the time we'd walk over for coffee, Manu would be behind the counter, fully showered, in his uniform.
How can I get you?
Looking pristine. Yeah. And we were like, what can I get you? And you could see everybody in the session just like, hold on, am I thinking of last week or were you just in that session? You're like, yeah, I'm here. And you do your day's work after all the time. Yes. Yeah, absolutely savage. So you were working there and then you said, I'm going to apply for this internship.
Yes. Cool. So then I applied for an internship and I remember like just remember how was my English, right? I come here in the morning to do James class, and he look my eyes like, okay, it was 6:30 in the morning. My English wasn't turned on, but he watched me. He watched me and like, are you excited for today? We're going to start internship. I was like, oh no, I'm fine. I'm Grant. And after 5 minutes, I was like, no, I'm excited. Come here, James. I need to talk with you. But then I started internship, and my English that time, I remember my first internship class, like everyone speaking English really well, wasn't more than like, we have more Brazilians there, but the other Brazilians like speak English, like living here more than 8 years, 9 years. And I was like, my God, how I will survive here. But like they, week by week, I still better, comfortable, practice more. I always write what I need to speak, and then happens. So then I start to speak well, better, more confident. So that is.
Yeah, deadly. Very good. So you did the internship. Then you ended up in another kitchen, right, as well, in the meantime.
Yes, so I still need to pay my bills, right? And then I start work. The internship was once a week in Nace.
Yes.
So if you don't know where is Nace, it's far, guys.
So I think in the interview, we said, how are you going to get to Nace? You don't drive. You're like, well, I've got Dublin bike. And we were I don't think you understand.
When I realized how far it was, I'm like, oh my God. But was every week there, every Wednesday night there. So we found a way to go there every week. And I work in a kitchen, an Italian kitchen, every evening. So in the morning I was barista, in the evening I was chef, and every Wednesday work in the internship. And school sometimes, yeah.
When I think of that period of time for you, where, like you said, you're working two jobs, you're going to school, and you're doing this internship, and nothing's convenient. Like it's, you have to travel for everything, you're all each end of the day.
Yeah, like, the trust in the process, I think, is the hardest part on that moment. Like, you need to trust every single day in the right direction, because if you don't trust on that, it's gonna be really, really hard. So about this, I didn't trust in Brazil, I was in the right direction. So go to work every single day for me was murder. It was really, really hard. And when I was doing this school, barista, work in a kitchen, go to an internship, I trust him was in the right direction. So this make the process a bit easy, not easy, but way convenient, right? I need to go this because I want that. So I want to work as a coach. So if I want to work as a coach, I need to get better English. I need to go to internship to learn how to be a coach. So I need to do all those things, and this make the process easy.
Yeah, so when I think of there's nothing easy about that, right? So nothing easy about it at all. And I know loads of people are going through that, right? There's lots of people who've moved to Ireland from Brazil and they're training in the different gyms. And a lot of them are in that same boat. They're working a couple of jobs. They're trying to learn their English as well, which is really stressful because you're in social environments all the time where you feel a bit isolated and you're like fucking stressing about not being able to understand.
I always say this for dude, that it's not easy at all here to build relationships in anywhere. Like, oh, you learn English, you can speak English, but it's not the same. It's not the same. If a Brazilian guy come here to the door, it's going to be like, he can speak English, but to build the relationship, the language is the most important thing. So if you don't have that, it's zero.
I can see that the amount of stress. I think I would just crumble. I think I would find it really difficult. So I'm in absolute awe of people who are able to move abroad, get the job, struggle through the long days, and also been trying to build relationships without the language. Man, that's such a struggle.
And I was talking with Ozzy about this today, like why we have many Brazilians here. We have a huge community, right? So if you struggle with English and you're like, oh, I can't learn English, you can still live here because we have lots of Brazilians. So you can go to a Brazilian restaurant, you can go to a Brazilian party, you can go to a Brazilian everywhere. So then make the Brazilian life here easy.
Yeah, that makes it easier, right? Yeah, but then you might miss out on the whole English thing.
Yeah, like, you're gonna miss the best opportunities. You're gonna miss the best side of Ireland for sure.
Yeah, it's kind of like the people who go to Australia and then they hang out with all their Irish people. So you might be missing the point. Yeah, very good. So, Jesus, like, I just think of the struggle. There must have been some, like, I know I can relate, generally speaking, about this living in the gap thing where you know that you're at one end of, like, at the start of the goal is kind of exciting because you're like, I'm going to move. I'm going to go and do this thing for myself. And there's some energy behind it. And now that you've arrived at the two goals, you've had bananas and you're a CrossFit coach, like, holy shit, you've achieved the thing within 18 months. And not only that, not only are you a coach, you're managing a CrossFit gym. Like, what an amazing achievement.
Yes.
But that middle phase, you know, those tough days when you're in the middle, it still feels like it's a mile away and you've got the 14-hour day. Like, I can relate to that. Like, being feeling like, am I ever going to get there? And am I on the right path? And am I doing the right things to get there? And one of the things that always amazes me, myself and James talked about this earlier, was one of the things that jumps out at me about you is your mindset. You always manage to avoid falling into the victim mindset. And the pitfalls are there everywhere. Because, like, at every turn, you could be saying, like, the world is against me. The circumstances are against me. Nothing's going my way. So is that something that you actively work on, or do you think it's something that you're, it's just your default?
I think I have worked on this the last years in my life, because in my last job in Liverpool, when I was Brazil, I always like, oh my God, everyone's against me here on this place. I'm never going to be better wage or promote or something like that. And I always stay in the same place. So I worked there 5 years. I didn't have any promotion or whatever. And the same thing all these 5 years. So when I moved here, I started to work around the purpose, right? I always said this for everyone. If you have a great purpose in your life, everything's going to be easier, right? So what is my purpose at the moment when I start to work as a coach or think about work as a coach was changing life. So I work as a coach. I go wake up every single morning. Everyone was asking me, like, how you do this every single day? How you wake up early and 6 a.m. you are like full mode. So I have the purpose. I want to change life. It's one person in my class. It's 10, 20. I don't know. I want to change life. So this make my life easy. And when all the vitamins come, all this mindset comes, I just try switch off, like, oh, why I'm doing this? Oh, I want to change lives as a coach. Oh, perfect. Why I'm training? So if you have a great purpose to train every single day, like, oh, I want to get health, not strong or whatever, because get strong is hard. Do your bar muscle up is hard, but you want to get health, you're going to train every single day. Easy, easy, easy. But if your focus is in one movement or whatever around these tangible things, then it's so hard. Because when you don't get there, you start to be frustrated. You start, oh my God, I'm doing something wrong. But is the wrong, is wrong purpose, right? So when you have the right purpose, so why I train every single day in my life the last 8 years was to get health. Of course, I have some numbers in my mind around this snatch or clean and jerk. But when I don't get there, I come back for the good purpose, and then this make my life easy.
That's amazing. James Rankin. So top that now. So
yeah, how do I follow any of that?
So I'm wondering on that same topic, living in the gap. I'm not at the start. I'm not at the end of this thing. I'm in the middle of the process where it can feel like the perseverance is needed, and you need to find, like, sometimes we're running on fumes. We need to find energy from nothing. How you generate it? How do you fall into the victim mindset and then do something about it? Like, what's your experience of that?
Oh, good one. Jeez, it probably depends on different scenarios. Like, whenever we first talked about this with Ben Bergeron and he explained all that, like, my default mode was I'm definitely not falling into the victim. And then he explains, like, you don't live in one or live in the other. You fluctuate depending on, like, the part of the day you're in, the thing you're working on, and all that jazz. And I say, oh, I definitely fall into this category here, that category there, and so on and so on and so on. And what I find whenever I have fallen into a victim mindset where I'm doing something and kind of wondering, like, why do I have to do this? And is this really important? Why are they making me do this? That type of attitude, for me, verbalizing it with someone in such a way that they won't, like, they'll allow me to talk about it and then question me on it, is a really good way for me to get out of that. So you're normally a good person for me for this, Jamie, and then Jill obviously at home as well. It's like, if I have these two people who will listen to me, not judge me at all, and then just gently poke and prod me out of that victim mindset, is a really powerful way to do it. Very slowly, I'm starting to notice a little bit more when it happens, and I'm like, oh, I think in this scenario, this is what's happening. And then I can get confirmation or not from there. I get like validation of it. But it's definitely something that when I'm in a victim mindset, I'm almost blind to it. And it's a really, really hard thing to notice, because I was so sure when he first explained it that I wasn't ever in that person.
Yeah, I don't think any of us want to identify that way either, right?
Not even close, because you're like, that's horrible. You don't, and you think, like, you automatically think of the people who live there and you're like, oh, I hate being around them, they're the worst, they suck the life out of me, I don't spend time with them. And then you're like, oh, bollocks, but in this scenario it's me.
I'm the guy. Yeah,
so it's a hard realization that I'm still coming to terms with on where I do it, and I probably haven't quite put my finger on why I do it yet.
Yeah, I think Bergeron said it too. He said it's we're evolved to default to there, because if we're worrying about the worst parts, mm-hmm. we're almost getting ahead of the problems.
Yeah.
But then there's this chronic problem with it where we can just end up living there all the time, and then it kind of holds us back. And I can relate to that, like talking it out.
Yeah.
How I probably do it is I will be stressing about something not being right.
Yeah.
Then I'll try and talk that out to try and solve it. And as I'm talking, I can hear myself almost just complaining about it. It's like, this is just complaining. So what I tend to do is start with a complaint, but then I can hear myself and I start answering it with what I'm in control of. So by the end of this, the conversation, it's been a one-sided conversation. I've just talked. I've started bitching and moaning and then said, yeah, but there's this and there's that. And I've kind of come full circle. Mm-hmm. And that's how I try. And I think that's how I get myself out of it again. But I definitely fall into it with the rumination in my head first of the, what about this? What about that? What about this?
100%. The more I'm in my head, the worse it gets. Something else that actually really helps me now that I think about it. I remember you in the internship, and I can almost wholeheartedly say that in that 12 week period, I wasn't in it. Like, there wasn't a victimhood side to me. Like, I was working awkward hours and I was trying to do this and I was trying to do that, and there was loads going on. And something that really helps me is seeing people who are in a scenario where I'm like, I don't know what the fuck I would do there. And Manny was one of those ones. And we had lots of conversations around that time being like, how are you managing all this? Like, are you sleeping? Your train is like, how are you still so happy? And he'd come in and every day, like, he looks dead. He's gray, exhausted, not sleeping, working too much. And then he's like, I missed you. It's good to see you. I'm so excited for today. And I'm like, dude, how do you have this positivity with you? And he's not like, you know, the false positivity of everything's going to be okay. Like, there was none of that shit. It was just, I know what I'm working towards. I know that this is a hard time. It's all going to pay off. I trust. And being surrounded by him then, and that's one of the reasons I really pushed it. Like, whenever you were talking about the manager job in Smithfield, I was like, Manu. Because I just know how amazing he is to be around with that stuff too. And being around him, like, helps, like, seeing that attitude kind of pulls you out of your own victimhood just a little bit as well.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it comes back to that purpose thing.
Yeah, so just quickly remember, but on this period of my life, when I was doing internship, my dad passed away in Brazil. So wasn't a good period at all. So this, like, my dad passed away and everything around this come back around my purpose as a coach, right? So my dad passed away because he didn't have a health life at all. He smoked 50 years and he didn't practice any sports, like just short walks around the block, like it's not enough. And with 7-9 years, he fell at home and break his femur. So when James said we need to have strong legs, I can prove we need to have strong legs. Mm-hmm. Because at that age, when we break his femur, he couldn't walk. So these simple things at home, you can do it. So you can go to the toilet. You can do anything. Yeah. And you just put value on this when you miss it. When you watch someone you love it, can do anything. You need to change the clothes. You need to change to do everything. So, and on those days, I watch people complain like, oh, I hate squat. No, you love squat. You love squat. You don't know what is not squatting. You don't know what is walking or whatever. So, like, my daddy history bring me now. So
absolutely. And then we all need people in our lives like Manu who can remind us when we're like, oh, I don't like squatting or this workout's hard, to say, yeah, it is. But then also the alternative is way harder. It's way worse. And sometimes we just need that person in our life who is like, yeah, I don't mind saying this to you because it's fucking, it's true, it's real. So let's keep the perspective, keep the big picture. I think that's one of the big challenges of this is like keeping a view on the big picture. Even when we, something less consequential than health, like even just our training goals, like we're talking about this quarter, we're trying to achieve things. And then here we are halfway through the quarter. And it can be like a bit like, I'm just going from training session. And as game day gets closer and we want to do that, it can sharpen us up again. But keeping the level of focus, keeping the level of effort high in this middle stage is tough, isn't it? So what about keeping the big picture, James?
What about it? I've kind of, definitely in the past, not something I was capable of doing. And now I've probably defaulted into relying on it too much. Where we had a session in Coach Pep last week where we were doing some psychology work and I had a bit of a realization where I was in my training relying on the fact that I've done lots and lots and lots of fitness in the past. I've trained really hard for like 5 or 7 days a week, multiple, like 15 to 20 hour weeks of training, and now I'm doing 3 hours a week of training, and my attitude around some training sessions has been, doesn't matter if this goes perfectly or terrible because there's always another one. And there's no like urgency in that day sometimes of, yeah, but go get like a squeeze the juice out of this one completely. And it's because I've been in that scenario where I've tried to squeeze the juice all the time and that doesn't work either. But I've gone to the other extreme of being like, it's fine, don't worry about it. So I've gone too big picture, and now I'm actively like, all right, I need to, yes, get the most out of this session. Not the end of the world if I don't, but then the next one has to be fucking good.
Yeah, because the big picture is a collection of small pictures, right? The day-to-day, squeezing everything out of the day-to-day.
Yeah,
and it's getting that balance right of saying like, like not the end of the world if today doesn't go perfectly. 100%. But then also, let's not be complacent by just saying like, sure, I'm in a long process. That's whatever, totally 60%, 80%, 90%, whatever I get out today is fine.
Because the other end of the spectrum then is, and like I've done this where a training session isn't going 100% to plan. Like, I want to snatch 100 kilos today. And then you get to 90 and you miss a rep. And then blood starts to boil, blood pressure goes up, heart rate goes up, we start stressing, and then we don't snatch 100 and toys go out of the pram, belts fly across the room, shoes get left behind us. And like, I've done that. Like, I remember working and training in CrossFit Derry and leaving the gym with my belt, my barbell, and my lifting shoes on the gym floor. I just fucking left.
Walk.
I was fuming, angry, and I didn't come back for hours. And I'm like, so in my head, I'm like, never getting back to that point.
Yeah, too consequential. Everything's too consequential.
Too consequential. However, fuck did I get results.
Yeah.
But I'm like, now I've counterbalanced that probably too hard, where I'm like, I'll get results
kind of no matter what.
Yeah, like, I mean, I train mostly hard and I believe in the program and I'm blah, 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 blah. And now I'm like, all right, where's this middle ground? And I see people do both all the time. And now I can very clearly relate to both. So it's trying to, from a coaching perspective then, I'm thinking, right, how can I get a whole group in the middle going, this is very important, super important today, but also
yeah,
we do have tomorrow.
we do have tomorrow.
And juggling those two things
absolutely
is a hard thing to manage.
And I think to wrap on this, like, Manu has the answer to this, which is the purpose bit. Like, the purpose piece is the key, isn't
it? Yeah, I always come back for the why. Like, why you're training every day? Why you do three sessions? Like, I'm doing three sessions because I want to get health and enjoy the life with my family. Your life's going to be way, way easier. Like, no, I train in 3 days and I want to snatch 110. Sorry, one on that direction. So it's like, why you do that? I'm doing this because I want to be health and enjoy the life with my daughter. Perfect. Then it's 3 days works. But if you want more than this and push hard on just those days, it's going to be frustrating. It's going to be terrible.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think that's why we have a very clear purpose on each training session we do. We program. The coaches are really clear on what the purpose of the day is. And like what you said earlier, James, if you just listen to coach, like, Amy will have the purpose wrapped into the session. And if you say, like, that's what my approach is, like, whatever the purpose of today, I'm going to chase that as hard as I can. Then we're in the process. Then we're not necessarily living in the gap. We're living in the moment. And the kind of big picture takes care of itself much better. Yeah. So it's a tough subject because, like, none of us are robots and we have our ups and downs. But I think we do have a certain amount of control over not just being a victim to everything and saying, what can I control today and do our best with that. Okay, let's switch gears. We're going to do some recommendations today. Last week we did albums. I got some good feedback from people about albums.
Just on that, actually, I went down, I sent you, Jamie. Elaine recommended Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
So I went and started listening to more Fleetwood Mac again because I did grow up enjoying them. But on Spotify, I went on to Spotify Radio with one of the songs and it just gives you random songs that are kind of like it and some that are a bit more out there. And a Rolling Stones songs came on. I was like, I've never actively listened to the Rolling Stones ever. And like, they're one of the biggest bands of all time. So I went and started listening to Rolling Stones songs and fuck me, do they have some tunes. Like, some bangers out there. So I've been on a Rolling Stones hype all week.
Amazing.
Which is wild, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was saying to you earlier that I saw them in concert, but in Slane Castle, where it's the worst fucking venue ever for a gig. The sound was terrible. You're 18 miles from the stage. Yeah. His shit, but like, what, like, Mick Jagger?
Yeah.
Oh my god,
legend.
What a legend. What a legend. Okay, we're gonna do recommendations this time. It's on Netflix.
Yeah.
And it's on documentaries. Yeah. Your favorite Netflix documentary to recommend to other people.
So I'm in the middle of one at the minute, and it is Together Treble Winners. It's the Man City documentary. As a Liverpool fan, and it's the year they won the treble, and Liverpool didn't win anything that year, so that was terrible. But I have huge admiration for Pep Guardiola, just from a coaching point of view, the way he, one, understands football, but then two, the way he relates with players. And like, that level of demanding technical knowledge, like, he pushes people to the absolute limits, but then he also seems to manage relationships really well. It's something that I'm like, oh, having that in here would just be like a game changer. I think it would be phenomenal. But then it's also just a really interesting behind the scenes thing. There's two things that really struck me. One, teams are the same no matter their level. So I'm watching the Man City boys and I'm like, they have the same shit carry on as all the rugby teams I've ever been in. Like, same terrible banter, same slagging each other off, the same like, what the fuck are those shoes you're wearing today? Like, that still happens even though they're multi millionaires. And then the other thing that really struck me with these guys was the things they do unintentionally that are amazing for team building. And one of the things that they did that year, I thought it was wild. It's so impressive. Haaland, like the big superstar striker, bought a bonsai tree, you know, those little trees, brought it into the training ground, and it's in like the physio room. So, you know, all the beds, and they get their ankles taped and their massages and whatnot. And it's under this UV light. They bought this special light for it. And there's a like a spray bottle, you know, like a cleaning bottle, one of them, with water. And you just have to spray it like all the time because it's used to really high humidity. So as a team, no one's in charge, zero responsibility, but collective responsibility. So every time you go in, you grab the spray and you just give it a and then you go get your physio. And everybody's in that room every day.
So you have 40 lads. So they're all growing this tree.
So they're all looking after this tree. And it's one of those things where if you don't spray it, it's like, here, take it, the tree. And it's an explicit call out, but most people just go up and just do it anyway. And I was like, there's this collective, what a silly little thing. Like, but the representation of it, I was like, and then they go and win the treble.
Yeah, that's great.
The only, like, Man United were the only other team to do it, and they're chasing it again this year. It's like, phenomenal. I was like, that's... But so it's those little things over and over and over again. It's like the All Blacks no dickhead rule. It's like just little bits like that that accumulate then in achieving exactly whatever you want.
What's the name of it?
Together Treble Winners.
Deadly. Okay. I'm going to check that one out. Manu, what have you got?
Here we go. Let's see here. Turning point. The bomb and the Cold War. So... I'm the guy who likes to watch those things, right? So to watch the history around the world and how the people can work really well to do bad things. So with wrong purpose, you can try fight everyone. And if you're really good to deliver it, your purpose for everyone, everyone gonna listen to you. Like the Cold War after the Second War was like those shit. Like two huge countries with wrong purpose, and like the technology around those things to build the more bombs and go to the moon and everything, like makes our situation now, right? All the technology we have now was developed on that time, but was with the wrong purpose. And the politics around that is for me.
This is my favorite thing to watch, right? Yeah. So this is a multi-episode thing, is it? Yeah. Or it's not like a single film?
No, it's multi-episode thing.
Yeah, and I've seen it there sitting there. I'm like, that's one for me now, but I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, it's very good.
It's good, is
it's
it?
Good. It's good.
Okay, and it just goes through different chapters of the Cold War and all that.
Yeah, like when changed the president of the United States and everything around this, like if that president was elected, oh my God, the thing's going to be way, way, way worse. And they pick other one. And when they kill the Kennedy, so everything around
it. Okay, I'm going to take a week off and watch that. That's it. That's got me excited. Amazing. I love the sound of that.
Yeah, I've just looked it up here. It goes the whole way from the end of World War II, when the US start working on the atomic bombs, and it travels the whole way to Russia invading Georgia and the Ukraine.
Okay.
So it's covered loads.
Oh, shit.
That's your weekend in Porto sorted, is it?
Yeah. I'm not talking to the lads in Porto. Okay, I've got a different type of one for you, which is a real, just a personal story one, which I normally hate that type of documentary because there's so many crap ones out there. Most of them are just shit. This one, though, blew my mind. This has been a while since I've seen it. But it's called Tell Me Who I Am. You might have heard about it. It's about two twin brothers. And they're being interviewed. And they haven't talked their whole lives. In years. But one of them got into a motorbike accident when he was 18. And his whole memory got wiped. Okay. And then his twin brother, as he got older, started looking into his family past, like their upbringing, and he started realizing all of this very strange and terrible things that happened to both of them as they grew up. And
so, like, simultaneously, this would happen to him, that would happen to him, but they didn't know each other. Wow.
They didn't know it was happening to each other. And then he started finding out. He had, like, suppressed memory. Then he started looking into it, like, oh shit, this has been happening to two of us. Now my brother has this memory wipe. Do I tell him or not? Because I can, like, I have this memory. It's deranging my life. But now I've got my brother who I'm not going to tell. And he hasn't told him up to this point. And he's trying to figure out in the documentary, should I or not? It's a real dilemma for him. And, it's just even the story. Like, they grew up in this big... one of those big country houses, like they came from money, but the money had all gone. So it was all like old family, like aristocratic sort of family sort of thing, and there was all sorts of weird shit going on in their upbringing. So you kind of find out about that in the documentary while this dilemma has been talked about, while you're hearing from both of them. Oh man, it's amazing. So it's such as just an unusual story, and you can tell as they're talking, you can see that it's not fully resolved.
Yeah,
like they're working way through it in front of the camera.
Wow,
it's amazing. So Tell Me Who I Am is the name of it. Highly recommend.
Yeah, there's your first. Would you rather be the brother that knows, or the brother that's oblivious to it?
And that's what you're sitting there going, do you want to know or not? And I was like, I absolutely want to know about my own life, but then also, do you want all of the pain and anguish and yeah, it's a really tough situation, but fascinating to watch. We're checking out. Speaking of would you rather, we've got two doozies today. This first one messes with me so bad.
Oh, go on.
I don't know how to answer it. So, right, James, would you rather be chronically underdressed or chronically overdressed for a scenario?
Overdressed.
So funny I predicted that. It's so funny I predicted that. Man,
overdress.
And I'm sure. Going to say chronically underdressed. Absolutely. Oh my god, I mean, because both I are terrible.
Yeah, I think underdress is so uncomfortable. Yeah.
It is. It is. But there is also, I think, a potential flex in it. There is something about the person who is comfortable showing up to something way too casual, that's really formal, and like, you know the billionaires who show up in the hoodie,
their unbranded t-shirt,
and they're like everyone's here in their suits, but I'm so above this that I'm just like, I'm just rolling in, I'm rolling out.
I think that only works if you're like a multi-billionaire though,
or if you're really confident. There's some people who are so sloppy and so like and they're like, yeah, I don't buy into all that shit. Yeah, but you're all just playing dress up over here.
I think the reverse is also true.
Go on.
Imagine going somewhere where everyone's in, you know, fucking shorts and t-shirts or tracksuit bottoms and whatever, and you rock up in like a three-piece suit.
Yeah.
And you're just like, yeah, I'll have a drink or whatever he's having as well. Like if we all went, say we go to the rugby, right? We're all about going to the Leinster-Northampton game. Imagine if we went to that and one of us rocked up in a three-piece suit and was like, yeah, can I get a round of four Guinness and two vodka whatevers, and everyone else is there in their Leinster top.
Yeah, no, I totally buy that. Totally see that. And it's like, I remember watching a clip of Conor McGregor on The Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah.
So he was the main coach, and then there was another coach who was like a California...
T-shirts and sandals.
Sandals, t-shirts, the whole thing. And he McGregor would rock up in his three-piece suit that's like 10 grand or whatever, and he would just rip out of your man. And he did, like, he completely won that scenario. Every time he won that scenario. But there's something about, for me, the discomfort of like, oh, I've overshot here. That is so terrible.
I wonder, is that because we live in tracksuit bottoms all the time, that just being slightly, like, we're permanently underdressed?
Well, I think it's because I'm not confident with dress up.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do it right.
I love dressing up.
And I
get elevated. Yeah, same as Manny.
So I feel like I get the pitch wrong. You know what I mean? Like, I go to something like, I am just a little, like, there's a guy who doesn't know how to do this and he's just trying a bit too hard. He looks like he's going to a wedding. You know, that sort of thing.
I
think there's getting it right, which is so difficult if you're not in that world. And some people who are living in that corporate world, like, they know how to get the degrees of of like business casual, business formal.
Yeah, they tie, jacket, waistcoat, and they can just put it all together perfectly.
They have the little comment, they can make adjustments. I have like one thing.
Yeah, and you get invited to something and say, oh, I need to buy something else.
It's like wedding, funeral, and also work thing.
Smart casual. What does smart casual mean?
Okay, very good. Right, we've got one more. Would you rather be the worst player on a winning team or be the best player on a losing team?
Oh, I'm not answering this first.
Oh, Manny, what you got?
I think I prefer be the worst player in the best team.
You'd like to be the worst player on a losing team.
Yeah.
Okay.
Imagine you can play in Manchester City, the worst player there. You're gonna still be good.
Okay, I'm gonna come back to you on that. All right. James, what are you gonna go for? Do you want me to give me my answer first?
Yeah, can you go first?
I would also be the worst player on a winning team.
I'm just gonna go with the other one then. Just I'm really torn between this. So I'm gonna say the best player on a bad team.
On a losing team.
Here's where I'm torn, right? Where I'm like, if you're the worst player on a good team, the chances are you're gonna get better. You're just surrounded by people here way better than
And that's my thinking.
And that's the thinking, right? And then the other side of that is, and if you're in that scenario, you're going to be so frustrated. Like, for me, I'm going to be like, I can't
believe you're going to hate myself every day.
Hate myself every single day. And then the other scenario is, you're the best player in a losing team. So there, I'm like, oh, you have an opportunity to help other people and bring them up, while also being frustrated that no one's quite at that level. And I think I'd be happier with that frustration.
So about this, right? So when I'm training, I like to train in an environment when I have more people better than me, because I always watch like, oh, I need to pick them. I need to work better. I need to work harder. So in this situation, if I'm the worst player in the best team, I was going to train every single day. Like, no, I need to train harder every single day. I need to get that level and keep pushing through. If I'm the best one in the worst team, I'm going to be like, oh my God, so good here. So, so no, I'm not a good person for that situation.
Yeah, I have that feeling of having something to chase. Like, I had that experience years ago where I left one job and went to another. And when I stepped into the new role, I stepped in with lots of confidence. I had been the best player on a bad team. And I stepped into a new team and I realized within the first maybe 3 days that I wasn't at the races. And man, did I feel bad. That was the hardest 18 months of my whole career. And I had to catch up. And I felt so terrible all the way through it. But then it's the thing that changed my whole career trajectory. Yeah. So it's like being in it is a terrible experience. I hated myself. And there was this feeling of panic, like, oh, fuck, how am I gonna solve this? Yeah. But then you do. And then you get everything you want from it. You know, that's the cool bit of it. But it's a rough experience. So it feels amazing to be a great player on a team that you're better than everybody. But your frame of reference is
it's off. I was thinking of it from a rugby perspective, where I was never ever the best player. Like, I was a mediocre player at best, and there was times where I was picked on some teams. I was like, oh, I'm the right, there's no one else, so we'll pick Jamesy. Like, that's what it was. Oh. So I've never had the reverse be true in that environment. So I'm like, oh, I just love to be the best player. And I'm already imagining amazing team and then me. That's what I'm picturing here. Not a bad team. So yeah. Maybe my answer is a bit skewed. But.
Yeah, but both are rough, right? Yeah. Because when you're the great player on a bad team, at some point you're going to collide with reality. No, you're gonna step out and you're going to be like, oh shit, I've been deluded for a long time.
Like, I remember in the Ripple, I was a good supervisor in a worse team. Right, my partner was really, really bad. My results never appear. Always the bad results appear. Always, always, always. I always want, like, oh, I need to go for that team of supervisor because all of them is really good. The manager there is so hard to work. So I can be the worst there, but my results will appear. So I always think about that.
Bad results are stressful things.
Yes, my God. Like, imagine you're best in the worst team. You're always going to lose. Like, you can play well, but the team's bigger than you, right? You're always going to lose. And like, fuck, you're never going to appear. Never, never, ever.
Fucking, you're dead right. On that note, let's call it there, lads. Thank you.